Hurrah!
Hurrah!
The fortnight's adjournment, coinciding with the school holidays, ended at 2 on Tuesday with this announcement from the Speaker, David Carter.
Honourable Members, I wish to advise the House that I have received a letter from Kevin Hague resigning his seat in the House with effect at midnight on 6 October 2016.
Kevin Hague was a List MP on the Greens benches since 2008. He had already left the building, having delivered his valedictory last month. His replacement off the party's list, Barry Coates, was in the chamber on Tuesday, ready to be sworn in.
I, Robert Barry Hobson Coates, solemnly, sincerely and truly declare and affirm that I'll be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors according to law.
And Barry Coates outlined his ambitions as a lawmaker in his maiden statement before the dinner break on Wednesday.
The golden thread through my career has been a passion for sustainability and social justice. It has led me to the Green Party and now into this House. I've achieved change from outside politics, and now I want to achieve change from within the political system. I feel a strong sense of urgency.
Unfortunately, there was none this week. While Barry Coates maintained the Greens' muster at 14, the total number of MPs in the House fell by one to 120, with this announcement on Thursday from Mr Carter.
Honourable Members, I wish to advise the House that I have received a letter from the Honourable Phil Goff resigning his seat with effect from Wednesday, 12 October.
Mr Goff's departure from Labour's benches on Wednesday appeared to have gone unnoticed there, requiring this request the next day from their chief whip, Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, I seek leave to correct Labour's two votes at the committee stage of the Agricultural Compounds and Veterinary Medicines Amendment Bill yesterday, when 32 votes were cast instead of 31. I think the member casting the votes is still grieving that announcement, but the correct number of votes at the time should have been 31.
Phil Goff was an electorate MP, and his departure creates a vacancy in the Mount Roskill seat, which has to be filled by the winner of a by-election. That leaves the opposition one short of a majority to support members' bills until after Saturday, December the 3rd, the date of the by-election announced by the Electoral Commission on Tuesday, which was the day that Mr Goff said goodbye to the debating chamber, where he had sat on both sides for some 30 years as a backbencher and a minister.
I think your first portfolio is like your first love, with respect to my wife sitting in the gallery. Not quite as good as your first love is what I should have said. I have had many portfolios, but I've only had one wife. And she'll be pleased to know that.
Get your way out of that, Mr. Goff.
I diverge, Mr. Speaker.
Labour's Phil Goff leaving to take up his new role as the Mayor of Auckland, where he was first elected to Parliament, winning the Mount Roskill seat in 1981, and going on to become a minister of some 20 portfolios and leader of the opposition. His success in last weekend's local body elections was just one of several that set his Labour colleagues crowing in Wednesday's general debate.
The National Party got smashed in Auckland. Absolutely smashed in Auckland.
Labour's Palmerston North MP Ian Lees-Galloway, in full crow in a chorus choir that included their Mount Albert MP David Shearham.
It was a great weekend last weekend, with a rout right across the country. In Auckland, Wellington, Dunedin, even in Whanganui.
Then a twist of the knife from Labour's Shadow Attorney General, David Parkham.
Now, we know in history that Tories, particularly in the UK, they actually, many a Tory loves a good thrashing. just not in public. But last weekend, they were thrashed publicly, sir, by voters across New Zealand.
Across the chamber, National's Chief Whip Tim McIndoe was unfazed.
Mr Speaker, I love hearing the Labour Party trying to cheer themselves up. They've had more leaders than we've had hot dinners. And if they want to look at the local body elections over the last weekend, the reality of the matter is that there's actually been very little change. More to the point, let's look at Phil Goff. There he is out there campaigning with blue hoardings because he didn't want to be associated with red ones.
National's Chief Whip Tim McIndoe, while the ghost of Phil Goff continued to haunt the chamber, his name on the tip of the Prime Minister's tongue when Mr Key rose to answer this question from Opposition Leader Andrew Little on Wednesday.
With only 18 affordable houses sold to first home buyers
developers pulling out, land bankers sitting on sites instead of building houses on them, and a minister incapable of doing his job, isn't it now just time to admit that National's flagship housing policy has been a complete and unmitigated disaster?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, in answer to the last part of the question, no, it's not true. In answer to the first part of the question, it's not 18, but even if it was 18, there'd still be five times as many people who voted for Phil Gough to be, voted for Andrew Littleby, the leader.
Mr Key's deputy and finance minister, Bill English, did have some good news for the government, elicited with the help of this question from National backbencher David Bennett on Thursday.
Mr Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Finance. What reports has he received on the Crown finances?
The Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, some surprisingly good reports. Today, the financial statements of the government were released for the 15-16 year. They report a surplus of $1.8 billion. This is $1.2 billion higher than was forecast in the budget just a few months ago. Revenues were about $1.6 billion higher than forecast, and expenses $600 million lower than forecast in budget 2015. Total Crown assets have now increased to $293 billion, the highest ever. And the government is on track to reduce debt to 20% of GDP.
Order.
Finance Minister Bill English, who, as the minister responsible for Housing New Zealand, had this response to opposition claims on Thursday that the corporation was going broke.
It's ridiculous. Just ridiculous. There is no reason to believe that Housing New Zealand is under financial strain, going broke, and it's absolutely nowhere near collapse.
As for a similar claim from Labor's housing spokesman Phil Twyford...
No, Mr Speaker, that's a ridiculous assertion about Housing New Zealand. And I know that that won't stop the member making it, vigorously, no doubt. But it's just verging on stupid, actually.
Order.
Now from the debating chamber to the committee rooms with Rhys Lyon.
Members of the Health Committee, who met on Wednesday for public submissions on former Labour MP Marion Street's petition on euthanasia, heard a harrowing story from Brian Wright Vangen, a Polish immigrant who, as an 18-month-old, was sentenced to hard labour in a Siberian prison.
My parents, six of us children, my grandparents, my uncles and aunts, their children, and we were all deported to Siberian slave labour camps. They all perished, 19 of them, including parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts and first cousins, 19 of them. By age six, I had seen everything, too much of everything, including death. I was even on a heap of bodies. That's one of my worst nightmares. And then I was grabbed hold by somebody who said, "He's alive, he's alive." So I am a realist.
Mr. Wright Vangen said that realism shaped his stance on medically assisted dying.
Every day it happens in our hospitals. Okay, let's leave it alone. That's very wise. Suicide, people have a right to their own life. No, if a person wants to do it, fine. But to insist that a doctor assists, that's another... Oh, no, that's not fair to nobody.
A later submission came from Louise Forsyth, a palliative care nurse who disagreed with the official stance of the body governing her industry, Palliative Care Nurses New Zealand. While the organisation had submitted in opposition to the legalisation of euthanasia, Louise Forsyth was in favour of it.
I personally have discussed the subject at length with many of my palliative care colleagues, and they believe, as I do, that patients should have the right to choose if they have a medically assisted death.
Ms Forsyth also spoke as the daughter of parents suffering from dementia.
In their increasingly rare and more lucid moments, both my parents regularly state that they wish they could die. It is truly horrendous to watch two beautiful people who were highly intelligent, articulate and dignified lose all of their former selves and become angry, aggressive, fearful, and totally dependent on caregivers to meet their needs. Personally, I believe that medically assisted dying should become legal in New Zealand.
Louise Forsyth with that submission on former Labour MP Marion Street's petition calling for an inquiry into public attitudes towards euthanasia. The following day, the Primary Production Committee heard submissions on a bill updating laws around food safety, including one from food writer Anna Tate Jameson, who said new food safety compliance costs resulting from the bill would adversely affect artisan cheesemakers.
We're the world's leading dairy exporter. Milk, butter and cheese, it's how the world sees us. And yet our food safety laws make it nearly impossible for our artisan dairies to operate. If you listen to the submissions today, you'll wonder how these businesses make any money at all. I believe we're reaching a tipping point. By trying to eliminate risk, we risk losing the artisan sector.
Or put another way, by cheesemaker Biddy Fraser-Davies.
So small operations finish up with a product no one can afford except wealthy gourmets at high-end restaurants and Government House.
Anna Tate Jameson called on the committee to consider the bill's effects on small cheesemakers.
I'd ask you to put yourselves in the shoes of small businesses who want to create new products and try to strike a balance between the need to minimise risk and the need to create an environment that fosters the sort of innovation that will add value to our most important primary industry.
Food writer Anna Tate Jameson with that submission on the Food Safety Reform Bill, which is due to be reported back to the Chamber by February the 16th next year. Later on Thursday, the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee heard submissions on the bill overhauling the government's spy agencies. Calling in on the select committee he served on for 12 years to make a submission on the Security and Intelligence New Zealand Bill, former Green MP Keith Locke voiced concern at the bill's apparent change of mandate for the Government Communications Security Bureau, or GCSB.
To me, it's very disappointing. When I was in Parliament on the debate on the GCSB bill in 2004, we were never going to use the GCSB to spy New Zealanders, and Speaker and Minister after Minister spoke in that vein. Now it's open slather, as the other submitters have indicated.
Mr Locke said government-approved surveillance should only be used to monitor criminal activity, not political dissent.
That's the experience I had when I got my SIS file and 2008, covering 51 years of surveillance. There was not a single indication of criminality. It was all about politically motivated surveillance. That is, I was dissenting against the government on the Vietnam War, on apartheid, on nuclear issues, on human rights issues, and this was the reason given for the surveillance of me. Nothing to do with criminality, and this system here, based around non-criminal national security issues, enables that to continue.
Former Green MP Keith Locke with that submission on the Intelligence and Security New Zealand Bill, which is due to be reported back to the Chamber by February the 18th next year. In total, there were 23 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Back in the Chamber, talk of elections continued with the first reading of the Electoral Amendment Bill, making some relatively minor adjustments to the Electoral Act, ready for the next general election due in 2017. The debate on Tuesday included this contribution from Labour's Chief Whip and Shadow Leader of the House, Chris Hipkins.
We are here debating the rules by which we are elected, and I'm willing to make a wager right now that there will be very little public scrutiny of this debate. It won't get covered in the media. It will not be on television. It will barely be covered on any other form of media. And yet we are determining the rules by which we get elected, by which we then have the authority to make the laws of this country, and no one is scrutinising us. And that's something that we should be concerned about, because what we have seen over the last decade or more is a diminishing of the Fourth Estate, the media, and the role of the media in scrutinising what we do. The fact that we are changing the laws around elections with no scrutiny is something that we should be concerned about.
Labour's Chief Whip, Chris Hipkins, speaking in the first reading debate on the Electoral Amendment Bill, which was sent to the Justice and Electoral Committee for public submissions. And the House passed 23 bills this week, which is a lot, although they all came out of the Judicature Modernisation Bill, itself a product of the Law Commission's review of the 108-year-old Judicature Act. And now for the week ahead, here's the Acting Leader of the House, Chris Finlayson.
Mr Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, 18 October, the Government will look to complete the first readings of the Outer Space and High Altitude Activities Bill, and the three regulatory systems amendment bills, and to progress a number of other bills on the order paper. Wednesday, of course, will be a Members' Day.
Acting Leader of the House, Chris Finlayson, and I'm Tom Fruin, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.